Picture this. You're out at Mojave Air and Spaceport on a Tuesday morning. Engine run-up complete. You're about to call ground for your taxi clearance. Then you hear it before you see it. Not the sound of a single aircraft's engines winding up, but something more distributed, deeper. Spread across a wider aural field than you're used to, you look toward the source and see it rolling out toward the runway. Two fuselages connected at the wing, a wingspan that stretches further than a football field. 28 main gear wheels rolling on the pavement, and slung beneath the center section where those two fuselages are bridged together. Something angular and purposeful, a vehicle that looks like it was designed for a very different kind of flight than the airplane carrying it. That's the ROC. The thing hanging under it is the Talon A. I'm Vector on Clear Direct. You're on Radio Hangar. And today, we're talking about the place where the world's largest airplane and hypersonic flight research have collided in the California desert and what it means for everything that comes next. This segment is supported by AviationSoul.com. Challenge coins for real aviation milestones. First solo. Private pilot. Instrument rating. CFI. Beautifully crafted and built to last. AviationSoul.com. Let's start with the airplane itself, because the ROC deserves a proper introduction before we get to what it carries. Stratolaunch was founded in 2011 by Paul Allen, the co-founder of Microsoft, alongside the team at Scaled Composites, the company behind some of the most unconventional aircraft ever built, including Spaceship One. The core concept was elegant in the way that only very ambitious ideas can be. Launching rockets from the ground requires burning enormous amounts of fuel just to push through the densest part of the atmosphere. What if you skip that part? What if you carried the rocket to altitude on a conventional aircraft, dropped it, and lit the engines once you were already above the worst of the drag? This is not a new idea. The X-15 used it. The Pegasus rocket from Orbital Sciences used it, air-launched from a modified Lockheed L-1011 TriStar. Virgin Orbit used a modified Boeing 747 for the same purpose until the company shut down in 2023. But Stratolaunch's ambition was scale. They wanted a purpose-built aircraft large enough to carry payloads that made orbital launch commercially serious, so they built the ROC, 385 feet of wingspan, that edges past the Hughes H-4 Hercules, the Spruce Goose, which held the previous record at 320 feet. The ROC's wingspan is longer than the entire playing surface of an American football field, goal line to goal line with room left over. Maximum takeoff weight of approximately 1.3 million pounds. A fully loaded Boeing 747 comes in around 910,000 pounds at maximum gross. The ROC outweighs it. Power comes from six Pratt & Whitney PW 4000 series turbofan engines, the same family that powers the 747 and the 767, sourced from retired commercial airframes, which makes the ROC, in an interesting way, the largest repurposing project in aviation history. The twin fuselage layout is not aesthetic. It's the structural solution to a specific problem. When you sling a heavy payload beneath the center section of a wing, you need landing gear support on both sides of that payload to prevent catastrophic asymmetric loading on the ground and during the takeoff roll. A single fuselage places the main gear on one side and creates a moment arm problem when the other side is loaded. Two fuselages, one on each side of the payload, solve it cleanly. Two pilots fly from the right fuselage. The left fuselage carries additional systems, but no crew. Those 28 main gear wheels exist to distribute 1.3 million pounds across enough contact area that the runway surface can handle repeated operations without failing prematurely. The ROC first flew in April 2019. Clean aircraft, no payload. Proving the basic concept, that was already significant. Paul Allen died in October 2018. He never saw it fly. After his death, Stratolaunch was acquired by new private ownership and continued development. The original orbital launch plan, which required developing a new rocket called Pegasus 2, stalled, but a different opportunity opened up, one that turned out to be where the ROC's real near-term value lay. The Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency and the U.S. Air Force Research Laboratory needed better hypersonic testing infrastructure. The United States had watched China deploy the DF-17, a ballistic missile with a hypersonic glide vehicle maneuverable enough to defeat conventional missile defense systems. Russia had deployed its own hypersonic weapons, claiming similar capabilities. Hypersonic development had become a genuine priority, and the existing test infrastructure, mostly sounding rockets, single-use boosted vehicles, and ground-based wind tunnels, wasn't generating data fast enough or cheaply enough. The ROC was available, the air launch concept translated directly to hypersonic test vehicle carriage, and so Stratolaunch developed the Talon A, 28 feet long. Delta wing configuration, no crew, powered by a solid rocket motor in the aft fuselage that accelerates the vehicle from air launch speed to hypersonic velocities, and designed, critically, for recovery and reuse. That last point carries most of the engineering value. Let me explain why. Hypersonic test vehicles historically have been expendable. You get one flight, the vehicle hits the water or burns up on re-entry. You recover the telemetry, the data transmitted during flight, and that's what you have. It's valuable, but it's incomplete. What actually happened to the vehicle's structure during 2 minutes at Mach 7? Where did the heat concentrate in ways the models didn't predict? What did the surface materials look like after exposure to those thermal loads? You can't answer those questions without the vehicle. The Talon A is designed to come back, and post-flight inspection of a hypersonic vehicle is, in some ways, worth as much as the in-flight data itself. You strip it down and look at it. Thermal protection panels that experienced uneven heating, structural members that deflected slightly differently than the model predicted, surface coatings that degraded at specific locations corresponding to specific flow features. Every anomaly is a calibration point for the next set of simulations and the next vehicle's design. You're not just gathering data, you're building ground truth. In December 2023, Talon A completed its first free flight. Released from the ROC at altitude over the Mojave, the vehicle fired its motor, accelerated into the hypersonic regime, flew a test profile, and was recovered. That was the milestone. Additional flights through 2024 expanded the envelope and continued building the database. Stratolaunch has also been developing a larger variant called the Talon Z, designed for higher Mach numbers and longer test durations. That vehicle is still in development. Now, let me back up and explain the physics more precisely, because I think hypersonic gets used often enough as a word that it starts to just mean really fast, without people understanding why the speed threshold actually matters. At Mach 1, you're creating a shockwave. Supersonic flight manages those shockwaves. They're real, the aerodynamics are complex, but the heating effects are manageable with conventional materials and engineering. At Mach 5, something fundamentally different happens. The air molecules ahead of the vehicle are being compressed so violently, so quickly, that kinetic energy converts directly to temperature. This is adiabatic compression, not friction, which is a common misconception. But the physics of gas being squeezed faster than it can dissipate heat, the nose of a vehicle at Mach 7 can see surface temperatures above 1500 degrees Celsius. Conventional aluminum, which starts losing structural integrity above about 300 degrees, has no business in that environment. Even titanium, which handles around 500 degrees in sustained use, requires special treatment. You're in the territory of nickel superalloys, ceramic matrix composites, and reinforced carbon-carbon structures. And there's the plasma sheath problem. At certain combinations of speed and altitude, the shock layer around a hypersonic vehicle becomes ionized. Electrons are stripped from air molecules, and the resulting plasma can block radio frequency communications. This is the re-entry blackout you may have heard of in the context of spacecraft returning from orbit for a future hypersonic commercial aircraft. This is a genuine operational constraint. You cannot talk to air traffic control through a communications blackout. Solutions being investigated include communicating through the wake region where the plasma density is lower, using higher frequency signals that penetrate plasma differently, and trajectory management to minimize time spent in the worst conditions. The propulsion problem is separate, but equally hard. The Talon A uses a solid rocket motor, effective for a test vehicle, but a dead end for any sustained commercial hypersonic operation because the propellant runs out in minutes. The long-term answer for commercial hypersonic flight is the scramjet, a supersonic combustion ramjet. A conventional jet engine slows intake air to subsonic speeds before combustion. A scramjet cannot do that. Above roughly Mach 5, slowing the airflow to subsonic would require losing so much kinetic energy that the system stops working. Instead, the scramjet burns fuel while the air moving through the combustion chamber is still supersonic. Getting that combustion to sustain reliably without the flame extinguishing in the supersonic flow is one of the hardest combustion engineering problems anyone has ever worked on. A scramjet can only operate above roughly Mach 4. You need a separate system to accelerate to that speed first, then transition. Nobody has flown a scramjet in sustained reusable commercial service. The X-43A reached Mach 9.6 briefly in 2004. The X-51A Waverider sustained Mach 5.1 for about 210 seconds in 2013 before its fuel was exhausted. The research continues. The aerodynamic and thermal database being built by Talon A Flights is exactly what future scramjet-equipped vehicles will need in order to know what environments those propulsion systems have to survive in. Here's what most people miss about the Stratolaunch program. The bottleneck in hypersonic development has never been concepts or even designs. It has been test opportunities. A conventional boosted hypersonic test from a range facility might cost between $50 and $100 million per flight when you include range operations, range safety, vehicle fabrication, and support infrastructure. At that price, the entire defense research community might afford a handful of flights per year across all programs combined. That is not enough flights to converge on an aircraft design. If the Rock Launch Talon A approach can bring per-flight costs down significantly, even to $10 or $15 million per flight, which is still not cheap, and if the vehicle flies multiple times, the number of test opportunities available to researchers multiplies dramatically. That changes what development programs can afford. Programs that couldn't build the data they needed suddenly can. This is the space crossover insight that I find genuinely interesting. It's not just that hypersonic vehicles cross the boundary between aviation and space in terms of altitude and speed profile. It's that the infrastructure being built to test them, using aircraft as launch platforms, emphasizing vehicle reusability, trying to drive per-flight costs down towards something sustainable, is directly borrowing the logic that the commercial space industry proved out over the last 15 years. SpaceX demonstrated that recovering and reusing rocket boosters changes the economics of launch completely. Stratolaunch is applying that same logic to hypersonic test vehicles. The lesson crossed from space launch into aviation research. That is a technology transfer running the opposite direction from the one we usually talk about. The airspace piece is also worth a mention for any pilot operating in and around the Mojave area. Mojave Air and Spaceport operates under a Federal Aviation Administration Commercial Space Launch Site Operator license, a different regulatory framework than a standard Part 139 commercial airport. When the ROC launches the Talon A, the airspace coordination involves conventional ATC clearances, commercial space launch corridors, and the Edwards Air Force Base Restricted Area Complex, which covers a significant portion of the surrounding airspace. Temporary flight restrictions go up. Traffic flow may be rerouted. The FAA's Office of Commercial Space Transportation is the regulatory body overseeing this, and the protocols being developed for these events are the prototype for how commercial hypersonic operations eventually get integrated into the national airspace system, if and when that day comes. Today, it affects a specific geographic area and a relatively small number of annual flights. In 10 years, if hypersonic test activity scales and commercial programs mature, the airspace integration challenge becomes national in scope. The frameworks being worked out now at Mojave are the foundation. The ROC is an extraordinary machine in the way that specific technical solutions to genuinely hard problems always are. Enormous and slow by design, built for endurance, existing to give vehicles that are the exact opposite of it a head start on speed and altitude. The world's largest airplane in service to some of the most demanding test vehicles currently flying. Paul Allen's original vision was access to space. What the ROC may ultimately deliver is the infrastructure to actually understand hypersonic flight, vehicle by vehicle, flight by flight, data set by data set until it's understood well enough to design aircraft that carry passengers at Mach 6. That day is not tomorrow. But the engineering that will make it possible is flying now over the California desert. Sources today include Aviation Week and Space Technology, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency's program documentation, reporting from Space News, and Jane's All the World's Aircraft. More at radiohanger.com. I'm Vector. Fly fast.